Hi, I'm Brian Mott, Chairman of the Board of Healing Waters International. What you're hearing in the background is nothing less than history being made in Chiapas, Mexico. We'll have more about what happened there later in the program as we talk to our special guest today, Mario Avendaño, Director of Healing Waters in Chiapas. But first, I want to welcome Tom Larson, President and Founder of HWI.
Hey, Brian.
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
What's been happening in other places? Just come back from Guatemala here.
Yeah, we just launched our third project in Guatemala, another project in our partnership with Compassion International. So we now have three projects there, two of which are at Compassion churches, and things are really running great there.
Yeah, I've honestly lost track. How many total projects at this point?
Well, honestly, it's hard for me to keep track too, but I believe we're at 42 now. Do you know if that's right, Mario?
Yeah, I think that's right.
42 worldwide.
42 worldwide, which would be Dominican Republic, Chiapas, Guatemala, and our pilot project in Kenya.
Now, it wasn't long ago that I joined you on a trip to Guatemala, so I'm a little jealous that I didn't get to go this time. I'm sure there were some pretty neat stories coming out of this trip as well.
Yeah, the one you were at, the inauguration of our first project there, was in the community of San Luis, as you remember, and Pastor Francisco, I had a chance to meet with him on this last trip and got to hear a great story from him where I said, you know, I know it's only been a couple months that the project's been up and running, but have you heard anything yet about the impact the project is having in the community? And he said, well, there's one story. And he said there's a man who lives across the street from the church who had always been very, very confrontational, or I don't know, just very hostile toward the church. The church is an Assemblies of God church, and this man is Catholic by background. I don't know if he is practicing Catholic or not, but he had always been saying bad things about the church. He was always annoyed by the noise the church made and the, you know, the crowds out in front, and was just always complaining about one thing or another. And his wife had wanted to go to the church from time to time, and he forbade her to go to the church. Well, after we launched the water project, he began going to the church to buy water from the water system. And Pastor Francisco told me that one day he was just at the church, the pastor was hanging out in front of the water system, and this neighbor who had always been so hostile toward the church was standing in line for water, and Francisco went up to him and just asked how he was doing and tried to initiate a polite conversation. And he said it was like the walls that the guy had up just began to melt as Francisco just engaged him in conversation. And it was like the guy had never, you know, gone as far to ever talk to the pastor, to ever become, you know, personally engaged with anyone from the church. And he just had his stereotypes of what evangelicals were like and decided he didn't like them. But when the church began selling water to the community at a very affordable price, you know, obviously enticing enough to even make a guy like him come to the church to buy water, that's when, you know, his walls began to go down. So Francisco said they've now talked on several occasions. The man has even started letting his wife attend services at the church. He hasn't come himself to the church yet. But, you know, as Francisco told this story, Pastor Francisco, you know, he was just, his eyes were wide with excitement, and there was just this huge smile on his face as, you know, he shared the story about how already, only a couple months into it, the water system is beginning to break down walls in the community.
Mm. Tom, I get comments a lot about how the Healing Waters model works on so many different levels and so many different aspects. I think one of the more interesting is how our community service program works. Can you explain to the listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, basically, the way the revenue gets distributed from every project is out of the gross revenue from sales, we pay the salaries of the guys who are at the church selling the water. We pay the electric bill, the water bill, the phone bill, if there is one. We pay for the consumables, which is the bottle caps, salt, and chlorine. All of the ongoing kind of monthly operating costs come right off the top out of the gross revenue. The net revenue that's left over gets distributed three ways. 50% of the net revenue goes to Healing Waters to help us offset our ministry cost of building and servicing these projects. 30% goes into a system maintenance fund, which is used to pay for future repairs and upgrades to the system. So if demand really takes off and they need to add another storage tank, there's money set aside to add another storage tank. Or if a pump burns out, there's money set aside in that system maintenance fund to be able to buy another pump. But the last part of the net revenue, the last 20% of net revenue, goes back to the church for them to invest in other community service projects. We let them choose the projects that they want themselves. It can be anything that serves the community as a whole, but we don't want them to, you know, build new pews or paint the church or do anything that's only benefiting the church. We want them to do things that are benefiting the community as a whole.
On our trip to Guatemala with you, my son Russell was engaged in a conversation with one of the pastors there locally, and he was particularly interested in that pastor's vision for buying a plot of land right next to the church to potentially build a soccer field on. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other things that the money's used for?
I love the creativity that the churches use to come up with these community service projects. We have actually several of the churches use the money to buy medicine for some of the poorest families in their communities who can't afford the medicine they need to get well. Several other churches sponsor some of the poorest kids in the community to go to school. I mean, they're public schools, but the kids have to have a uniform, they have to have a backpack, they have to have a notebook, they have to have, you know, a decent pair of shoes to be able to go to school. Some of the families are so poor that they can't even afford those items that their kids need to go to the public school. So some of the churches use their community service funds to buy some of that stuff for kids to go to school. We have one church that is in a really dangerous neighborhood in the Dominican Republic, and they use their community service fund to, once a week, provide a meal for the homeless, the drug addicts, and the prostitutes who are living in an abandoned house down the block from the church. And again, the church has come up with those ideas, and they decide what they want to do with it. We don't tell them what they need to do. As long as it matches kind of the criteria of what's community service, then we let them dream and pray and ask God what he wants them to do with the money.
I think that's tremendous. Tom, let's shift gears for a minute here. I'm excited to get to our guest here in the studio today. Mario Avendano is the director of Aguas de Unidad for Mexico and is visiting us here in Denver this week, coming up on his first year anniversary with Healing Waters. I understand it's this month. Is that right?
That's right. It's the 9th of May.
The 9th of May. Well, congratulations. Right. We're thrilled to have you on the team and in the studio with us today.
Thank you very much. I'm really glad to.
For our listeners that don't know, Mario, where's Chiapas?
Chiapas is a state of the Mexico, and it's in the very south, all the way south, and it's bordering with Guatemala. And it's also bordering with the state of Oaxaca and the Pacific Ocean.
It's a beautiful place.
Yes, it is.
Are you from there originally?
Yes. We have been there for about, my family, for like 4 or 5 generations. And yeah, I have lived there most of my life.
What is Chiapas known for?
Well, Chiapas is known for its beautiful places, natural resources, and like a lot of people, you know, we say that our state has everything. It has the coast, it has the mountains, the highlands. The weather is really nice at the ocean, at the coast, and the water is warm. And in the mountains, it's a little cold. Not as cold as here, but it gets pretty cool. And also, it was known some years ago for the Zapatista movement, which happened in early 94, at the very beginning of that year. That was an uprising led by the sub-commander Marcos, and they were fighting for rights for the indigenous people.
Yes, I remember the reports of violence in Chiapas. Correct me if I'm wrong, there's also been hostility between the Protestants and the Catholics. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, unfortunately. But yeah, that has been happening for a lot of years, and I guess that increased in the last 20 years of the last century. You know, just the last 25 years ago or something like that. And it has improved a lot in these last 6 years. A lot of that has to do with all the effort that the state government has put into it, and also all the work that a lot of people has been doing. You know, a lot of people has been involved, as well as organizations like us, you know, like Healing Waters. It's been a really great experience to be part of that process.
Tom, I know you lead us as an organization in a way frequently where we try to be sensitive to God's leading. And I know that we ended up in, a big reason we ended up in Chiapas was you felt called to go there to use water as a way to bring reconciliation between Protestants and Catholics.
Yeah, when Dana and I lived in the Dominican Republic in 1997, 1998, this is before Healing Waters ever existed, we were really saddened by the conflict and the division between the Protestants and Catholics in the community we lived in, which was called La Victoria. And the Protestants would go as far as preaching against the Catholics and telling, you know, preaching that Catholics were not true Christians. And we even heard one preacher preach that the Pope was the Antichrist and that Catholics were all going to burn in hell if they didn't turn from their wicked idolatry of, you know, praying to Mary and praying to the saints. And just that message was being projected by a lot of the evangelical churches, which only added to the barrier between the Protestants and Catholics. And there was no cooperation. They didn't trust each other. They said bad things about each other all the time. And while we lived there, one night as we lay sleeping in our mosquito net covered bed, I had this incredibly vivid dream where I was preaching in a Catholic church. I don't think I'd ever even set foot inside a Catholic church before then. And felt like when I woke up from the dream, like God really wanted me to know that he wanted me to do something to try to bring Protestants and Catholics together. I don't know how to explain it other than I just had this, you know, nagging sensation when I woke up that God gave me that dream and that I was supposed to do something about that. Well, fast forward a couple of years and we built, you know, the first water project there at our sister church in La Victoria. This is, you know, still before Healing Waters. And at one point, our sister church began offering water to three of the Catholic schools in that community in La Victoria, donating water to those schools. Well, that simple gesture by our sister church, which was an Assemblies of God church, to donate water for free to three small Catholic schools in the community, completely transform the dynamic between the Protestants and Catholics in that community. You go there today and it's a completely different place. So when we started Healing Waters, I felt like one of the things God wanted us to do was try to replicate the success of that water project at our sister church and try to, you know, figure out how we could use water projects in other churches to, you know, achieve the same kind of healing and transformation between Protestants and Catholics. So when Brett Edwards, who's our Mexico sponsor, came to me and said that he wanted to sponsor our organization getting started in Mexico, and he didn't really care where in Mexico, he said, you know, we can determine that. And we started to look into all the possibilities. Well, you know, for one of the statistics I looked at showed Chiapas as being statistically the poorest state in Mexico. But then as I was, you know, looking on the internet and reading all this about the history of Chiapas and the conflict between Protestants and Catholics there, that was just, to me, another compelling reason to go there.
You know, we talked a minute ago about the multifaceted nature of what Healing Waters does, Tom. To some, the economics may be appealing, the fact that we can sell water for a third or a quarter or whatever of the market or street price, the medicinal benefit of pure drinking water. But personally, the reconciliation possibilities that you just talked about, really, they touch me. I mean, that's a story we hear time and time again about how these projects do not only what they're supposed to do in terms of providing pure drinking water, but it's a platform for much more.
Well, it's really a big reason why we chose the name Healing Waters and why it says in our mission statement, part of our mission statement says that our goal is to empower churches and poor communities to bring physical, social, and spiritual healing to their communities.
Although it has been a discussion point, I know in the office and also at board meetings for, I think, at least a couple years now, up until now, we've only worked in Protestant churches.
Right.
I mean, so the story that you're telling and that Mario is going to elaborate on is really our first. Mm-hmm. We just launched the first project in a Catholic church. Mario, I know that you're Catholic. We're excited about having our staff in Chiapas half Catholic and half Protestant. That's very exciting. Tell us, given that we're not a Catholic organization per se, was it a difficult process for us to get a project installed in a Catholic church?
Well, it wasn't that difficult, but it just took a little longer, I think. It was really nice when I heard that Horacio, who was the one of the first guys that started the operations in Mexico, you know, we became very good friends, and he was telling me that they wanted to work with Catholic churches also. So I got very excited, and I just mentioned that I had a friend that he was my best friend in junior high, and he became a priest, and he was active, you know, and he was in charge of one of the areas. And so I gave Horacio his contact information, and he phoned him, and Horacio started the initial studies and the water supply study for the possible approval of this church to host the system. And it was really nice to just, you know, to be part of this from that point, just as a contact person. And Horacio followed all the process, and after some time, the church was approved, and then they started working on it. They had to build a cistern to hold the water. So after that, we got over that, they continued the work. And finally, it was inaugurated last February, the 18th of this year.
Yeah, an exciting day. I heard the inauguration was a special day.
Can you
tell us about that?
Sure. It was a really beautiful moment and a great experience. It was one of the largest inaugurations we have had, according to the amount of people that attended. I believe we had over 500 people. The church was packed, and there were still some people out in the street. And it was really nice to see the sermon that the bishop gave, and it was great.
Every time Tom goes on a trip, or every time there's an inauguration, there's always a volume of emails that move around the system here domestically. This particular time, there were more than usual. So I suspect that there was some exciting things happening. I heard about a number of them, but particularly the bishop's sermon. Can you share with the listeners a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, first I have to tell you that we were a little disappointed that Tom had a very important appointment in Washington, D.C., I believe, and he had to fly the day of the inauguration, like just a couple hours before it took place. But, well, that was another great experience, and forgot to show us how he does things, because that just made that to look for an interview with the bishop in the morning. And, well, the priest Daniel helped with that, and Tom and some of the sponsors that went and myself went to visit the bishop. I had an amazing interview with him, and I guess it was really a beautiful moment that I experienced myself. And I have to tell you that at one point I was like a little, I don't know, jealous or something about Tom, because he said, how come you talk amazing Spanish when you're with important people?
Because you know? Normally my Spanish is terrible.
Well, it's not that bad, but it was just really good when he was talking to the bishop, and I was really
impressed. It was the
impressed.
Gift of tongues.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great interview. And so that said a lot of background about the organization. Also, the bishop knew some about it, but after the talk with Tom, he understood a lot more what Healing Waters is trying to do. So he dedicated, I would say, 90% of his sermon to talk about the organization, the ministry we're doing. And also, and very importantly, he talked about the attitude that the people of the community should have towards the Protestant Catholic, you know, I don't know how I call this.
Relations,
yeah. Because a lot of times, and that has been historical in Chiapas, if somebody comes around the door and we know it's Protestant, a lot of people just don't want to even open the door. So the bishop stressed a lot in his sermon that we are all brothers and sisters, you know, and as brothers and sisters in a family, we are different. Mm. And we have different ways of doing things, but that doesn't mean that we don't love each other and we should not respect each other, you know. And that was really beautiful to hear that from him, you know, coming from him and being so clear and direct with all the people in the church. And he said, well, we, you know, we are different, but our Father is the same. Hmm. So we should just love each other and respect each other and just keep listening to him.
Hmm. What's remarkable is this is coming from a place where 10 short years ago, Protestants and Catholics were killing each other.
Yes, literally. Yeah. There were a lot of deaths in small communities because of this reason. In several schools, Catholics wouldn't let Protestants get in, or Protestants wouldn't let Catholics get in, you know. Mm. It was really amazing. And I guess the state government have a great achievement into that. Mm. Things are a lot better nowadays.
We opened the show today with a background of a gentleman praying. It was in Spanish, so I'm not sure many of the listeners understood what that was all about, but tell us that story. As the ceremony drew to a close or a conclusion, the bishop asked Sebastian to pray.
Yeah, that was like, I guess I would call, I don't know if you say like this, but the cherry on top of the cake. That was like amazing thing because he's in our staff and he's a pastor. And he's the pastor who was working at the church that hosted the first water system in Mexico. And he was helping to dig the cistern, and he also helped to paint the walls where the system was going to be set. And of course, the priest Daniel knew about this, you know, and he told the bishop about it, and like very gladly surprised. And then after that, I guess, and knowing what the organization does, the bishop asked Daniel, please tell him that I invite him to share the blessing and the dedication of the system after the Mass. Mm. And we thought that was really special. When I heard that, when Daniel phoned me and told me that, I just went and visited my mom, and she's very religious, and I told her about it, and she was almost crying just for telling her the news, you know. That was so special. And that was in a first time in the history of the state of Chiapas.
Mario, I was raised Catholic, and I can never recall a Protestant praying in a Catholic Mass. Is it as rare in Chiapas as it appears to be in the States?
Yes, definitely. And we really, as the bishop and other people, if this had happened before, and they said no. You know, this is like the very first time that something like this happened. So
in a very real sense, there was history made that day.
Yes. Yeah, I believe so. And yeah. So
that's a tremendous story. We were talking about community service projects earlier. Are there stories emerging from Chiapas about that part of our program?
Yes. Well, we have seen that the church is having the water system and giving this service to the community has done a great impact in the people around it. And because they see a testimony, you know, that from the church. And there are several stories about it. And because this 20% that the church receives for community services has been used in several different ways, like Tom was mentioning. And, well, one of my favorite stories is one of the churches has helped building a part of the house of an old lady, you know, and because there are a lot of houses don't have a floor. It's just dirt, you know, and well, that creates a lot of, I don't know, sickness and problems, health problems. So this church has used that money to provide at least a floor of concrete or cement in these small houses, which usually are like the whole house is just one room or maybe two if they are lucky. And projects like that have been done, you know, and also the one of the sponsors of the first systems, the Aldersgate Church, has come three times to Chiapas to help with the labor with these projects, which has been really great, because after they are the sponsors of the first system, and after that they became sister churches. So they have a very close relationship now, and they are just increasing the service to the community of Berriozábal.
You know, I want to interject here and give a little more background about that church. The church he's talking about, where Sebastian was the pastor, is a Presbyterian church, and the water system at that Presbyterian church in Chiapas was sponsored by a United Methodist church in Lubbock, Texas, called Aldersgate United Methodist Church. Well, it was really neat because when we needed to find a new program manager for our staff to help, you know, find new churches to host our projects and you know, work in the relationship with the church, we went to Sebastian, who is the pastor of our first, you know, partner church there, and said, "Hey, do you know anybody who you could recommend to us?" Because he was pretty well connected within evangelical circles and especially in the Presbyterian denomination. And we went to him just for a recommendation, and he came back to us, you know, I don't know, a few weeks later or something, and he said, "You know, actually, I'd be interested in that job." He was, I want to explain, he loved the church where he pastored, and they loved him. It's not like he was, you know, in trouble and needed a new job. Things were going very well. The church had grown a lot under his leadership, and he came to us and said he wanted the job, and I talked to him on the phone and said, "Why would you want to leave your church and come to work for us for less money?" Plus, you know, he had a parsonage at that church, so he had free rent, where coming to work for us, he was going to make less in salary and not have a free house. And what he told me, his reason, just blew me away. He said, "You know, as a pastor of a Presbyterian church, I love my job, I have a great ministry, but it's only to Presbyterians. And even if we bring new people into the church, they're going to be Presbyterians." And he said, "I love the vision that you guys have to work not just with Presbyterian churches, not just with Protestant churches, but with Protestant and Catholic churches." And it was part of that that made him want to come on staff with us in the first place. So I watched the video. The audio we heard at the very beginning of this CD came from a videotape. And in that videotape, when the bishop, you know, introduces Sebastian and asks him to pray the prayer of blessing over the system, you can just see Sebastian's eyes light up. And for a Presbyterian pastor in Chiapas to be honored by that, to be asked to be prayed in a Catholic church instead of being threatened by it or, you know, anything else, it was just amazing, the God story, if you will, of the whole event. God brought so many people together. God put on so many people's hearts the same thing, which is, let's work together. Let's build unity here. It was really amazing. But I guess I interrupted you, Mario. Do you have more stories about other community service projects in Chiapas?
Yeah, there are several, but I have to fly back home tomorrow, so I'll be brief with just a couple. Well, another very nice story about the community service fund that the churches have been using is, for example, in the church called Obrera, which is a Pentecostal church, last month they decided to use part of their fund to help another sister church to build their casita to hold the system. That was a church that we had already approved. And that was also a first time for us, you know. That was the first time that happens, that a church decides to donate that money to help another one to have a system.
So we had a new church that was getting ready, and they had to prepare the shelter that the equipment was going to go in, but didn't have quite enough money. So another church used their community service fund to help them out with the money they needed.
Yes, and they gave them 15,000 pesos, which for that is a very good amount.
Wow.
And we hope to be inaugurated in that system, who has been held by them, by the end of this month, hopefully.
So, Tom, we talk a lot about the self-sustaining nature of our projects. I think this is one of the first times we've heard about the multiplying nature of our projects as well.
Yeah, and what I love most about the story is that didn't come from the Denver office saying, hey, can you ask the church to do this? That was something that they came up with entirely on their own that God put on their heart that they wanted to do. I love that.
Mario, thanks for sharing with us today.
You're welcome. It's been a real pleasure.
It's a great pleasure having you with us here in Denver. Safe travels home. Tom, as we wrap up, any further thoughts?
No, just again, thank you to all the people who've donating. I guess I'd like to say a special thank you to one couple in particular, Craig and June Ponzio from here in Evergreen, Colorado. Craig has sponsored a number of our projects in the Dominican Republic, and when I shared with him the idea that we eventually wanted to be building projects at Catholic churches too, I shared that with him years ago. And about a year ago, we got together for coffee, and Craig asked me, so Tom, how are you doing on your desire to work with Catholic churches too? And I said, well, we've been trying, but, you know, we've kind of been running into some walls, and, you know, there's a lot of bureaucracy in the Catholic churches, and so far we haven't done it, and we want to someday, but, you know, and I was kind of making excuses and hemming and hawing, and he said, well, I'll sponsor the first two projects you build at Catholic churches, but, you know, they have to be Catholic churches. Well, that was the inspiration we needed to say, all right, let's make it happen, and it took a while, but, so Craig is another person who God put it on his heart to kind of share this vision, so thank you, Craig and June.
Well, thanks, Tom. I think that wraps it up for today, and join us next time.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you very much.